his yomo.
Yomo, they kicked him out of here. You don't know. I saved his life by a miracle. Shvatami gave him a bed. He's only been here 6-7 years, and he's going nowhere. It's not a... are you in my class regularly?
Yeah, I was in America for a few weeks.
1 second, so I asked. So, were you sitting here before when I walked in? No, that was someone else. I'm on. Okay, you have to teach Jack after class. We'll work it out.
The microphone,
you
must have...
Well, what I didn't... I plugged it in.
It was plugged in, but it's something...
Is that done? Yeah.
No, it's on. It's...
Hello? No, my God. Don't tell me we're having problems.
Somewhere there's a connection. It's not a connection. Try again. Do you want to try?
Go, try. No, no. Okay, 1 second. 1 second. Let me start all over.
No, there's a connection. It was, I think there's not in good shape.
I think I have another mic. Now it's on. Okay, we'll play with it. Okay, 1 second. Name?
Adi.
Oh, you were on the list, and then you didn't show. 1 second. Adi, last name?
Senior.
Sina, S-I-N-E-R.
C-I-N-E-R.
I'm writing in C and I'm saying, okay. And what yismicha are you in?
It's my second.
Second, yeah. And where are you from?
Lorraine.
Ah, that's right. We spoke. Lower Merion. Who would dream what would become? Lower Merion, that was my first... Lower Merion Synagogue. I lived 123 Kanchahatkin State Road, Ballard Kinwood, Pennsylvania. If you can pronounce it, you're a genius. Everyone says Ballard Kinwood, but it's Ballard Kinwood, correct. All right, we're ready to go. We have a world to do in the shir and out of the shir. Some shilas have to deal with. Okay, today is Sunday, October 21st, 2018, and I say hello to the students in front of me and to the sub-students listening across the wide expanse of the universe. I want to dedicate today's shir and all the Divrei Torah Machshava. I was very sad to learn that Benny Sharpstein died, Bernie Sharpstein. It's Bernard Sharpstein. Maybe some of you don't recognize the name, but some of you know I never dreamt I would get involved. Everyone calls me the author. I hate to think that that's my. I hate to think that that's what I've achieved in life. I would rather think of a Rebbe par excellence, at least strives to be a Rebbe par excellence. But of all the publishers I've dealt with, Bernie Sharpstein Ktav was the nicest guy and the most honest guy. I have to say that. I've dealt with JPS. I don't want to go into a long list of problems. Now I gave everything I write to Tzedakah, so it's a different ball game. But I want to recall his memory fondly. He was 92 when he died, so when I dealt with him 20 years ago, he was early 70s, which makes sense. He had a good sense of humor. And, you know, he came from a prominent family. His parents were in book publishing, and they did a big chesed to Reb Mendel Zaks when Reb Mendel came to America. So he republished the Mishnah Brura. And it literally supported him for a while, because to buy the Mishnah Brura, there was a tremendous market for it. But you need a place to store the books. So his parents gave Mendel in their storehouse, Reb Mendel, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. Give me 1 second. Let's see.
I think when you jiggle the microphone, it comes up.
That's my mic to begin.
In my office.
extend it, it causes a problem.
It kind of does. But Jack is so aggravated.
Because it's something internal to the microphone itself.
Yeah, they need a new microphone.
Jack, just disconnect that. Connect this.
And I'll go back to this.
It's not working.
The microphone is... Was it plugged in?
Yeah.
Okay. 1 second.
The feedback. Great.
It's not what you need.
Oh, well. Okay.
There's something there with that connection. Okay. Move this. You can move that to the side. When Yomo comes today, Steve, it's with the big Mesirat Nefesh. Anyway, I want to tell you a cute story with Bernie Shofstein. Bernie Shofstein was not one of the great Lamdanim. He was in YU. He was a basketball player. Spent a lot of time on the court. But in those days, Reb Mendel Zaks used to come around to every class and give a personal bechina. And he comes around to the class, he sees Shofstein, he says, your parents did me a big favor, gave him a 90 on the spot. He said, had he tested him, he would have gotten a 90 upside down, a 60. But this way, so I want to dedicate this year in his memory. Halacha l'maisa, people have asked me about the new shaver. I've got some emails, it's a new shaver that Norelko came out with. And there was a Talmud in the Kollel who brought it to me. My nephew brought it to me. Someone asked me, I think, from England recently. And I told the person from England, look, I'm a little bit hesitant to paskin. From what I could understand, it seems to be mutter. But it's an isidioraita, and I'm not a technical expert. I said, contact Somit. I wrote this answer on Thursday. Believe it or not, on Friday, in Yediot Achronot, here's the shaver in the money section. How much it costs, and the most important thing for us, that Ishur l'shimush hilchati shel machon tzomet. So in relation to, here it's listed, the Phillips one blade, spelt in Hebrew, vav, vav, ay, aleph, nun, etc. One blade, misidrat PRO, the gum QP, has an Ishur from Tzomet, so if they give an Isha, I sign on. Jack, in relation to what we've been talking about in Shir, before I do that, let me just do two other extraneous matters, or three other extraneous matters. First of all, I just want to mention to you, a Talmud of mine just put out a very fascinating sefer. It's a second book, and he really is capable. It's called Beyond Routine. And it's put out by Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein. It's an Urim publication. It's put out very beautifully. And the book begins, a quote. I don't want to be a Shomer Shabbos trained monkey, not a monkey trained to wear tefillin, and not a monkey lighting Shabbos candles. And who is the quote from? It says here, Rav Aaron Rakefet Dash Rothkopf. And the whole book is about that quote, meaning what he does in the book is we shouldn't do mitzvot out of rote, out of habit. He deals with Shabbos, he deals with Juntif, he deals with tefillin. In the previous volume, he dealt with davening, daven your age. But it's a fabulous volume with so many sources, and the way he puts it together brings it to life. I would describe the book as a modern version of what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wanted to do. You follow me, Adi? Have you ever studied the Musar movement? Have you gone into great depth? If not, go back in time someplace on the internet. You'll hear sharing from a guy named Rakefet. This is a modern version. It really brings it to life. Kala kavod to Rabbi Yeshua Grinstein, who some of you may know. He directs, he co-directs, I believe, Rabbi Riskin's program for training rabbis for going overseas for 3 to 5 years, the kehilot that need a rav and no one else is willing to go, and they don't want to take a chabadnik, so they supply the rabbis all over the world. They do a beautiful job. Another point, we're talking here about, we began about the whole question of interrupting during davening, and if you're allowed to make announcements and pages. And Jack told me a story about someone in the Shtiblach, a big Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Raziel, if you know the name. Moshe. He's retired today, Moshe Raziel. He headed up the Bar Ilan Kollel for many years. And he told Jack that let's say Rish Chodesh. So Rish Chodesh, they forgot to announce before davening Yalav Yavo. The way you should really do it is, this is the way I tell Shliach Tzibor, the Kaddish before Shmon Esrei ended off with the Nusach of Yontef, of Fresh Kaddish, a little bit different. And that way they'll remember Yalav Yavo. But if you got to do all that, someone reaches Yalav Yavo and he says aloud, Yalav Yavo! And Rabbi Raziel said to Jack, absolutely, totally forbidden. Here I have to tell you I differ with Rabbi Raziel. I've never yet, it's Minik Yisrael, all over we do it. I'll ask you a different question. If someone stands Shmon Esrei, and he says every word aloud, he's not Yotzei? Well, I mean, what are we talking about? All right, Chana, we learned from Chana how to daven. And that's, the Rabbi always would say, all the feminists that are maledicting the rabbis and cursing the rabbis, the whole art of tefillah, we learn from Chana. So if we learn from Chana, take a look. A woman taught us how to daven. And Chana is davening, and she davened silently, so we say it silently. But all right, that's a lachatchila. It's not, I wouldn't say b'di'evad, you're not yotzei. For Haraya on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, even on Yontif, people daven aloud, and it's brought down la halacha because today there are many reasons. One reason is we have Sidurim and people are not familiar, so no one's going to get mixed up. The people say it aloud because they're not used to this nusach. They want to be sure they have it right, so they have more kavanah if they say it aloud. Certainly in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur it's brought down that you're allowed to do it. So if it be a halacha lachatchila, but halacha lemaisa, there are many apes of what to do. But b'diavad, if someone forgot, so you say, v'tein talum motel v'racha. I hold you, Yotze. You can't say you're not Yotze.
He didn't say you're not Yotze.
He said, and you said to him, even if so many people will forget to say it, v'afa b'tein. He said, I don't agree. Okay, that's halacha. That's an answer to that question. To last week, we spoke about the Sri Deyesh, Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg. And I was telling you about the Sri Deyesh and who he was, and my Talmud did a doctorate on him, and I didn't mention my Talmud's name. And people said to me after class, see, you didn't mention his name, you just spoke about him. So I have to tell you, first of all, his name is Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro, Melech Shapiro. It's a well-known name. He's published 2 books, more than that. He's published 2 books and 2 other, I would say, elongated pamphlets. Very interesting individual. Yes, do you believe it or not, Thursday when I came down to the office, or what am I talking about, not Thursday, Monday or Tuesday, of Monday of last week, I came down to the office, there's an email waiting for me from Mark Shapiro. Here, Yom Rishon, it was last Sunday, the day I mentioned him without mentioning him. So I want to tell you what he asked me, and I want to tell you the answer, because it dawned upon me, and I really was shaking, that I'm probably the last person alive who can answer this particular question. And I want to take off 2-3 minutes. If anyone's listening who one day may do research and come up with this question, let me give you the answer. What did Mark ask me? Mark asked me something very simple. You all know the name Rabbi Mordechai Gifter. We've spoken about him many times, many different angles. Rabbi Mordechai Gifter, born in America, raised in America, goes to Talmudical Academy. From Talmudical Academy, his uncle, who is the dean of men of the yeshiva, someone I knew very well, Mr. Zar, sends him Shmuel Leib Zar. We used to call him Shalag, Shin Lamed Zayin, the Rashlaz we used to call him, Rav Shmuel Leib Zar. So he sends him to Tells, where he came from. He goes to Europe. Now, you go to Tells. Adi, have you studied in Tells in Europe? Did you go back in time? Where did you study? Where did you go to high school? MTA. And then you went on to yeshiva. Where did you study here in Israel? Hakotel. And then you went on to yeshiva. All right, this is a product of today. But I'm a little bit more fortunate than you, because I can combine Europe, New York, and Israel. Baruch Hashem. So, you know, when you go to Israel, or even HaKotel, and you go back, Yeshiva College, how much time did you wait? What did you major in college?
Psychology.
I can't hear?
Psychology.
Psychology. All right, psychology. Some Zankers in psychology. When you're in the rabbinate teaching Torah 60 years, you become an automatic psychologist without a degree. But you study psychology, and you studied other subjects, and all that was at the expense of learning Torah, right or wrong. All right. Could be. You don't have to convince me, that's for sure. But if I'm a Lakewood Rosh Hashiva, if I'd be Rabbi Olshin sitting here, Rabbi Olshin's cousin, he'd hit you over the head, right or wrong. You go to Panovich, they'll be furious with you. Even in Merkaz HaRav, you might find some old-timers who would put the needle in, certainly in Harmur. You follow? You don't know the Israeli scene, so forget what I just told you. But in Yeshivat HaMar, believe me, they hit you over the head. Gentlemen, Reb Mordechai Gifter went to Tells. In Tells, he became so angry at the yeshiva that raised him. And he had a very good Rebbe that he was very close to, Reb Moshe Aaron Peleyev. Don't remember Rav Peleyev? You remember the name. It's after your time already, too. Yitzchak, you certainly remember Rav Peleyev. So he wrote Rav Peleyev a letter. He had a whole correspondence. Later it's published. Endless correspondence with Rav Peleyev. So he writes Rav Peleyev part of this letter. You must tell the good students in MTA graduates, the good students in Rees, get out. Don't waste your time in college. Come to Europe. Learn in a proper yeshiva. Tell them they're going to become apikarsim ameyaretz only in Europe in a proper yeshiva where you don't waste your time on collegiate studies, Binyamin. That's where you have to go. That's where you have to straighten out. That's where you have to become a Talmud Chacham. Follow? Okay. So Rav Peleyev wrote back to him that what you say might be correct. He tried to calm him down a little, but he said, I can't do anything because I don't want to upset the Admon, Aleph, Dalet, Mem, Vav, Nun. And Mark Shapiro writes to his Rebbe, what's he talking about? Yitzchak, can you answer it? What's he talking about? No, he's talking about Revel. This is when Revel. This don't get the Rav involved. Don't get the Rav involved. Don't get Rabbi Belkin involved. This is when Revel was the Rosh Yeshiva, and his personal Rebbe was Rav Peleyev. Gentlemen, I wrote back to Mark. The answer is very simple. Adom comes from Edom. Adom, red. Rabbi Revel was a redhead. His beard was red. They called him behind his back the Reita. Moshe, you know a little Yiddish? Ask your grandfather who's down in Eilat now practicing his Yiddish. Ask your Zayda when he gets back, Vos mentos a Reita. And so what he was saying was, he's telling Rabbi Gifter, I'm paid a salary by the yeshiva. My boss is Rabbi Revel. How can I advocate students leaving the yeshiva? It will upset the Admon. You follow? And he writes back to him, Ein lo mali rome admonia shev lo belishka to. And, oh, I don't want to quote the whole letters, but you have nothing to fear. The redhead sits in his office. He won't know what you're doing. And he goes on and on against the college and the upper courses. Now, I have to tell you, there were many letters that Rabbi Gifter wrote. Some of them were never sent. His Rashi Yeshiva in Tells told them not to send them. They understood already it's too extreme. They're not going to understand you in America. Those letters survive. This may be one of them. They were published in Yeshurun. It's very fascinating. Ultimately, they come to light. But this is a little point from Rabbi Gifter's life, and this is Rabbi Gifter, and the Admon can only be Rabbi Revel. Finally, one other point, and this is interesting, Baruch, Binyamin Baruch, you're going to find this point extremely interesting, because I made a mistake. I was misinformed, but it's interesting now. Why was the Rebbe misinformed? All right, so when I was a guest of the London community, I spent a month of my life in Hendon and Golders Green. I gave many shiurim, big crowds there, because they're very fascinated by Torah Derech Eretz, Torah Mada, because the heart of the London Frum community post pre-World War II is of German origins, people running away from Germany. The original London Jews totally assimilate the four, five, six generations later, more or less. But the Germans came in, the refugees, and reconstructed it. Now there's plenty of Chassidim there and Belzer, and it's a different world today. So they have this annual dinner of this very important shul in Hendon, and people have to be entertained. You're going to bring Rakefet to speak at a dinner, no one will show up. They want to, so they bring Andrew Sachs. Andrew Sachs is the Spanish waiter, Manuel, in the classic series, Fawlty Towers. So I looked at them, you bring Manuel? So he said, yeah, he's Jewish. He's from Germany. He's a Kohen. He gives Birchat Kohanim at the dinner. And I repeated it here in class, either on Sunday, Monday. I don't know how he got involved, but it had to be Sunday because there's supposed to be another English fellow sitting here, the other Binyamin. So this is from someone from England. Question. Shalom Rabbi, as a keen student of yours, I felt you should know that Andrew Sachs, a.k.a. Manuel from 40 Powers, is not Jewish. His mother was a Catholic. And I want to tell you that I looked it up in Wikipedia, right on. Mother Catholic, father Jewish. Father may have been a Kohen, and he picked up a little bit from his father. As far as the speaking at Ne'er Yisrael in Hendon, that happened not because he was Jewish, but because he was the most high-profile speaker that could be found for 5,000 English sterling. I don't want to read the letter further, but you get the point. So I apologize for the misinformation, but I was misinformed. You can see why. And Rabbi Reuven will be willing to speak for Ne'er Yisrael for 1,000 sterling. I guarantee it. You can invite him, and he'll give you a wonderful talk. Okay, now let's move on. We're coming to a real major problem. So you see, the whole question of doing a minor sin to spare someone else from a major sin, this question hangs fire. The Gemara seems obvious, you can't do it. And nevertheless, we find throughout history that the Jews were meiser nefesh for other Jews. All right, when it comes to Russian Jewry, or if saving them spiritually, saving someone from the Nazis, there's no question you're allowed l'chalel kol haTorah kula outside of the three major crimes to save a fellow Jew. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg's tshuva with the mixed singing with the Ezra group is a classic tshuva, and that repeats itself time and again. B'nai Akiva, Ezra, as I told you, we asked, it said the Lubavitcher Rebbe was asked, it was said that the Rebbe Yitzchak Kutner was asked, Rav Kutner turned away. With the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I challenge anyone to contradict me, but the Rebbe, according to tradition, pushed Reb Shlomo Lekalbach away because he started being Makarei boys and girls. And Reb Shlomo, remember I quoted it to you in the Monday class a few years ago, Shlomo said, if I'll only have men alone, I'll get one, two men, no one else. Nowadays, Chabad all over the world, show me one Chabad where the outreach is limited. Whatever they do, it's men and women, the Rav, the Rebbetzin, hand in hand. I was at a big Chabad affair. Everyone is sitting together. I'm sitting at the table, only at Chabad. Men, women, women, men, Jews and Gentiles. Right next to me was a Jewish woman who in her middle age became a Jew again, sorted out. Chabad picked her up. Husband is a guy, a prominent medical doctor. Very nice, fine, goes along with her, encourages her. They're not going to get divorced. So here I am sitting at the table. Believe me, if they bring over wine that's not mevushal, I'll have a big problem if he pours me a cup of wine. But you see, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov had a very balanced answer. The question from the Mayan, which I trust Moshe went through, we don't know all the facts because we don't have the question. I mean, imagine to carry baggages on Shabbos to write name tags. Absolutely not. But now we come, let me go further. And Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, as I said, the young man sitting in the BMT, never dreamt he would become a world-class figure. Honestly, I don't know how much influence I had upon him. A Rebbe has to be honest. You teach many students. Some read you, some don't read you. I can always tell 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later when I meet a student, I can tell you right away if I had any influence. If he says to me, Rabbi Rakefet, oh, good to see you again, that means I had absolutely no influence on him. We just dropped oxygen from each other. If a student says, Rebbe, ah, good to see you again, it's a sign I had influence, okay? If he says, Mori, Rebbe, and kisses me, it's a sign I did a lot for him. But you can't win them all. Well, I don't want to take any credit. Rabbi Moshe Weinberger was my student, but he created a whole new world. Now, this book that he wrote at the time was revolutionary. We're talking on to 30 years ago. It's... people didn't think in these terms yet. All the shyness that come up. But one of the questions he gets involved with at the end of the chapter is the problem that haunts us. What do we do with Friday night? We can begin, first of all, without getting involved in outreach. Unfortunately, everyone in the world today lives in two worlds. Everyone struggles to be able to say, all my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren are totally Shomer Torah mitzvot the way I would want them to be. You just had in Satmar an unbelievable scandal that's shaking the world where two girls convert b'fnei am ve'eder and accept Yashka as the guy. I don't even want to spell it out. And two girls, then they tell their two more Satma, four Satma girls from the finest homes with the biggest yichus. One of them is the daughter of a Rebbe in Flatbush. No, God have mercy. God have mercy. But there's a lot to be said there. Chabad has made a very good point that all Satma teaches is enmity, hatred, every Jew is no good. And the Christian church teaches love everyone, everyone is a human being created in the image of God, etc., etc., love, and that's what Chabad teaches. Why did you have to go and spit in your parents' face and rip up 3,000 years of tradition? It's a very good point Chabad made. But coming back here, now in your immediate family, I don't want to mention any names or point anyone out, but he is a nice Jew who has 4 or 5 children, and one of them is a Mechallel Shabbos. No. When does the family get together? We're in motion all week. I hate to tell you this. The only time I eat with my wife is Friday night, Shabbos lunch. The only time you eat with your family, I say, well, my daughter, Shabbos, all right. No, Friday night, you want to invite your son and daughter-in-law and grandchildren. And the only way they're going to come is by car and go back by car. No, is this question classic or not? Let's take Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, Georgia. Big, big shul. Many Balei Tshuva from the shul. The shul is famous for producing endless Balei Tshuva. Rabbi Feldman Shul, Emanuel Feldman. Do you know that the parking lot is open on Shabbat? Do you know that, though? I'm not making it up. This is a Ne'er Yisrael graduate. Parking lot is open on Shabbat. A tshuva from Rav Ruderman was Matir. And they boast that many of the people that came and parked on Shabbat today, that's where they developed the idea of a Shabbos house. Have you heard that? Binyamin, have you heard that word, a Shabbos house? Moshe, you know what a Shabbos house is? These people aren't paupers like we are. You, your parents have one apartment, right? You don't... one house, one apartment, whatever. You don't have 3, 2, 4 different addresses. In America, Baruch Hashem, they have a beautiful house 2.5 miles from the shul. For Shabbos, they have a little apartment. People went and built big apartment near the shul. You buy an apartment just for Shabbos. A condominium, okay? Just for Shabbos. Shabbos house. Stamford, Connecticut. This already is a YU graduate. Rabbi Ehrenkrantz. My Talmud there today is Rabbi Cohen. He cannot change anything that Rabbi Ehrenkrantz is still. He was there under 50 years. You come into the shul, you see his picture right there. Wow. That's that. He really ran with the 9 hands. Chronel Levracha. Rabbi Joseph Ehrenkrantz, I knew him. His brother was a member of my shul in Essex County. His sister-in-law, who was the treasurer of my sisterhood, was a niece to the author of the Hatikva, Imba. Her mother was Naftali Tzvi Imba's younger sister. Remember I told you many times that Imba was a drunkard, and when he was in the hospital, his final illness, his sister used to sneak in with a bottle of whiskey sewn into her skirt. You followed, I don't know if they checked you then, but no one checked under a lady's skirt. That's the way he got his liquor. So I know the family. There was a parking lot there. I told you, I davened there 2-3 years ago. Shavuot, the kid had a bar mitzvah, the Shabbos afterwards, whatever it was, I was there for a good few days. And the kid lays the Torah beautifully, reads the maftir, davens musaf, gives a drasha. And then I'm walking home with a crowd around me going to the rabbi or wherever we were going, whichever house we were eating in, and there's the kid driving away with his parents. Look, what do you do? What do you do? Now, talk about outreach. Talk about a shul. Talk about Maplewood, New Jersey. Look, when the shul began, who began the shul in Maplewood? I came in a refugee from Lower Marion Synagogue. I was re-elected by, I write about it, Charlie Liebman, he became famous, Professor Liebman, Zichrono Livracha. His first article was on Yours Truly, when it says, Young Rabbi, write in Aaron Rothkopf. So re-elected 9-7. But even if I wanted, I couldn't stay because I was appointed to the YU faculty. So Dr. Belkin said to me, I'm making a condition. You have to remain in the rabbinate because I don't have enough rabbis and you have a nice personality. You can succeed. All right. He picks up a phone to Community Service Division to find a shtela for Rabbi Rothkopf within commuting distance of the yeshiva. And Maplewood had just contacted them, a doctor doing tshuva. It was a whole story I've told you more than once. He was a Kohen, he married a Gioret, it broke his father's heart. His father was a Shreicher, a Yiret Tzaddik, and he's now doing tshuva in midlife and building a shul in memory of his father. and he needs a rabbi. So I come to Maplewood. How did Dominion begin? Dominion began with people that the doctor operated on. He was an orthopedic surgeon, and they did him a favor by coming to shul. Vic, how do you think they came? Some of them couldn't walk. Right, Grunstein? They all came by car. So here you have a million beginning. That now Reb Moshe is Trivet. I cited them in class a year or two ago. Reb Moshe is Trivet. You begin a youth minyan Shabbos, and you know that the majority of the minyan is coming in cars. Can you do it? Reb Moshe was absolutely 100% opposed. So here you have the classic question. I'll do a little sin. If naiva, it's not really, but the concept, misayeli de avera, whatever you call it. But maybe I'll have a miracle by inviting these people for Shabbos. They'll open up to Yiddishkeit and they'll become frum slowly but surely. Some of them suddenly. You never know. You know the story. There's a book just came out, everyone is talking about it. What's his name? The famous actor here became a Baal Tshuva in the 70s. Give me his name. Excuse me? Actor here. Movie producer. I'm blocking out on his name. Shpizin is much later.
Uri
Zohar, Yashikaya. That's the name we're looking for. So Uri, you know how Uri Zohar became from? Uri Zohar, when we came in Aliyah, not when you came, it's when I came, 69, he was Mr. Entertainment. And he was on the movies and the TV. I will say something to his credit. He did not run around with women. He married very young, got divorced, and he married again, and he was very loyal to his wife, and he was very close to Harik Einstein. I mean, this was the classic Israeli scene. And then he had a TV show, and suddenly he appears the next week with a kippah. And a week later, he blocks out the naked lady that was the background to his show. And the third week, tzitzit is sticking out. And the whole world went crazy. What happened to Rizal? Well, the entire story never really was released. He never spoke about it. But lo aleinu, there was a terrible tragedy right before the elections in 88. A bus was shot up on the way to the Jordan Valley. And part of the family killed were grandchildren with part of this rabbi's family. So he was Menachem Abel every day he came for the minyan, Uri Zohar. It was in Shari Chesed. And the reporters hanging around the house kept on seeing Uri Zohar. So finally they cornered him. And they asked him, what do you have to do? Well, what do you hear? The Zuberman family, what does that have to do with you? And he broke down and told the story. And the story is very simple. Uri Zohar is an intelligent person. In order to do tshuva, you have to have an intelligence. They just published President Trump's IQ. It's like 153. It's not stupid, you understand? So Uri Zohar, top of the world, Mr. Israel, movies, TV shows, nothing lacking. He started to ask why he went in the world. He could have all the lick he wanted. He had drugs. They played around with drugs and... He was told there's one rabbi who can answer all your questions, Rabbi Zuberman. Rabbi Zuberman's background, you don't recognize the name, the Zubermanim from the old city. They walk around with tefillin all day. He was from England originally. His father did the English translation of Rashi, the Zuberman Rashi. So he's very intelligent in the spirit of Torim Derech Eretz. You meet some of his family and followers in Machon Lev. You'll see occasionally a kid sitting there with tefillin on. You know right away he's a Zuberman. So Uri Zohar comes to him. It's a true story. And he shoots at him 100 questions. The typical questions that the average Israeli has who's been stripped of any knowledge of Judaism, doesn't know what it's... went to school there and doesn't know, outside of reading Hebrew, he doesn't know what an Aleph Bet is. So Rabbi Zuberman tells him, you be my guest for Shabbos. I make one condition, you can't drive. You have to stay in the President Hotel, which was 3 blocks from his house. And he says, I'm not going to answer any of your questions. by the end of Shabbos, by Havdalah, you won't have any more questions. And that's exactly what happened. He came, and at this tragedy, when they interviewed him, he said, look, I walked in with 1,000 questions. Friday night, when the father walked into the room to make Kiddush, all the children stood up for the father. He said, when I saw that, all my questions were answered. He said, my kids, my friends' kids, what derech eretz do they have? Now, what story does this remind you of that I was an ear witness to, that Art Scroll published a story which is correct? The airplane with Rabbi Kamenetsky going back from the Knesia Gedola in 1981, and he's sitting there with Yeruchim Meshel, the head of the Histadrut, and his grandson is standing over him, and they're having a whole conversation in Yiddish, Mamalushin for Rabbi Yaakov, and it's Mamalushin from Yeruchim Meshel, it's still that generation. And Yeruchim Meshel finally asks, what is that young man? Who is this young man? He says, my nainikul, my grandson. Your grandson? You have a common language with your grandson? He says. So Rabbi Yeruchim Meshel says, my grandchildren don't even talk to me. You have nothing to talk about. Our concepts are totally different. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said to him, let me explain to you. Many people believe that Darwin is correct. Well, if that's the case, your grandchildren view you as being closer to the monkey. They think they're smarter. My grandchildren view me as being closer to Maimer HaSinai. They lean onto me because I'm closer to hearing God's words, the Ten Commandments, Matan Torah. Beautiful, beautiful answer. So now you talk about Friday night. Let people come, drive, and remember this Moshe Weinberger, who's already involved in Kiruv in the 80s. And here on page 79, the only written response I have found is one by Reb Moshe Sternbach, a brief one. It deals with a young man who became a Baal Tshuva and wishes to expose his parents to the beauty of Shabbat by inviting them to spend Shabbat with him. Unfortunately, the parents will agree to come only if they can drive home at some point during Shabbat. Remarkably, Rabbi Sternbach does not quote any sources and redefines the prohibition of Ne'iva as applying only when one actually intends to cause the other Jew to stumble to sin. If, however, one's intentions are to help the other Jew, there is no transgression. The young man claims that his parents are violating Shabbat continuously at home, and if they come for at least part of the Shabbat, they will observe the laws. Therefore, Rabbi Sternberg permits the invitation as long as the son explicitly asks his parents to spend the entire Shabbat with him, and tells them how it pains him to see them travel on Shabbat. Rabbi Sternbach adds that care must be taken to prevent the Chilul Shabbos that will result from the neighbors seeing a car pull up at this man's house on Shabbat. Therefore, the car should be parked at some distance from the son's house. Now, this is a very fascinating trip. He gives you the source. When you open there's a footnote, there's a source. Who is Reb Moshe Sternbach, first of all? Anyone know who I'm talking about here? He's the Skan Beit Din, Av Beit Din of the Eid HaRedet. Today may be the Av Beit Din already. Rabbi Sternbach's native language happens to be English, which is also, he's from England, the family from Switzerland originally. They tied in with the Soloveitchik family, their Machatenim, there's marriage. Either his wife is a Soloveitchik or one of his. Excuse me? He's from Switzerland. He has all this background. He was in South Africa, you name it. Halacha l'maisa, he's very far from being a Mizrachiite, or being an Agudist. He just sat with the Satmarud in America. I'm not happy to mention that. Believe me, I was very, very upset. But all right, I was told he was there. Like, let me not say it publicly. Let's forget it. But I was told by someone within Satna the inside story. Haber Fashtanen already. There are other factors involved. But it's a very interesting posek. He's a little bit, I would say, he's not accepted in the mainstream as a posek. In other words, whenever you do watch Sternbach, it'll either be referred to as a chumrah or a kula. You follow? It's not so mainstream. It's not like Rav Elyashiv or Rav Avadja that are much more mainstream. But here he comes up with a concept which, by the way, halachically does not hold out. Lifnei means if you help another Jew do an Isa, Messiah de Aver, has nothing to do with whether you, what your intentions are. You follow? But he says something very interesting. He's adding a configuration, a new color to this concept. That, all right, you want to help him. What he says, the other point that Moshe Weinberger makes is a very interesting point, and a lot of rabbis have told me this. Look, this Jew is driving to shul. Better he should drive to shul than not come. I say, what are you talking about? Because at least if he spends 3 hours in shul, 3.5 hours, he's not mechalel Shabbos, he's not shopping, he's not this, he's not that. I saw this in Mount Kisco. I'm not paskening, believe me, I am a kanoi here. You don't know, I'm a bigger kanoi than Rav Steinbuch, but I'm trying to understand. I'm not paskening. When I see a car go on Shabbos, it hurts me. A Jew driving on Shabbos, ugh. Halavai, I would have the power that if he looks at me, he should say, oh, there are good Jews, maybe I should be like that. Unfortunately, I'm nowhere near there, and it's a crime that Rakefet has a good reputation. If I don't know anyone who said I became from because I watched the way Rebbe leads his life. You follow me? Don't forget that, Adi. I'll talk about that in the Monday class. You'll be dancing, you'll understand what I have for Monday. Wow, okay, but let's come back here. It's a very interesting point that people at least 3-4 hours are not going to be Mechal Shabbos. Steve, can you tie that in with the question I asked the Rav? Yitzchak? The Rav gave me the exact answer. Remember the question? You're stopped by a car on Shabbos in Yerushalayim. How do I get to Rehov Chernichovsky? Right? And so I wrote to Reb Moshe, what do I do? I never got an answer, because Reb Moshe already was surrounded by interferers that this question has political implications, which I understand. When I visited America in 78, this has to be, so I asked Rebbe a slew of questions, and we spoke for hours. So this question that Rav told me, You will give him directions to get there as quickly as possible. He's going to drive anyway, save as much Chilul Shabbos as you can. When I came back and told it to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, he did not agree with his father-in-law. He said it's still Messiah L'Dei Avera. He doesn't know if he would agree with the Rav. But this is exactly the point. Save 3 hours. He's not going to be Mechal Shabbos. He's in shul. Comes to your house Friday night. All right. So Shabbos began this week at 6:30, 7 o'clock, let's say. You got home from shul 7. I got home from shul, I think, 7:10 on the button. And all right, the way I make Shabbos, it's Moshe, believe me, I'll litvak. It's not for you. I'm always learning. Forget it. I met a student Shabbos morning. I'm ready to have a conniption. A chassidish guy, and I'm walking to my daughter. This is 10:30 in the morning. I meet him Shabbos morning. He's running to mikveh in the shtiblach. I would shut the mikveh down after 7 o'clock Shabbos morning. And then when we're coming back from my daughter, an hour later with my grandson, he's running back from mikveh. I said, where did you daven? He has 20 people coming for lunch. We punish alaynam. Shabbos morning, I began learning. Not at this morning began at 4:10 already, But the Shabbos morning, I began later, 5:10. Okay, Shabbos, you have to sleep a little longer. Absolutely, it's a halacha. And boy, what I had accomplished by 10:30. But this, come to a meal, and sing smiris, talk the great Torah, mifabrein, a Hasidic story, epis from the Tanya, the Likutei Torah, echveis from the Eish Kodesh, well, they talk. All right, so the father is sitting at the table from 7:10 to 10:30 when he's falling asleep, and his wife pokes him and says, "We have to go home." So you've taken 3.5 hours where they're not Machalos Shabbos. It's a difficult question. I have to give all the credit in the world that Reb Moshe Weinberg raises the question. I'm curious if anyone will inform me what he would say today to this very question. All over the world today, it began in South Africa. The chief rabbi, Rabbi Warren, what's his last name?
Goldstein,
Rabbi Goldstein, Warren Goldstein, introduced the concept of one Shabbos, take it and observe it, take it and observe it. So all over the world they've instituted, but people are, there's some, I don't know in England, but I don't know in South Africa, but I know in America people are driving. I told you the story when I came back from America with Morris Engelberg, Moshe Engelberg. Who is Morris Engelberg, first of all? Oh, wow. That's DiMaggio's, not confident, lawyer, accountant, everything. DiMaggio died in his arms. When I met him, he wrote a whole book. When I met him 19 years ago, all he was talking about is money and DiMaggio, and I went crazy. I said, Moshe, what happened to you, a graduate of a yeshiva katana, and here all your certificates, the money you gave to this Catholic charity, that's DiMaggio's money, he's giving it out. DiMaggio was a Catholic, he was taka, I believe he was buried as a Catholic. And he tells me all he remembers from yeshiva katana that the rebbeim beat him with the ruler. Alright, I come back this past year, 19 years later, all he can talk about is the shul he built, the Friday night dinners. Chabad picked him up in a place of Hollywood where there was no shul, plenty of Jews. They opened up a Chabad shul, he built the shul, he gave them the money, it's dedicated in memory of his parents. His wife went along with him, his daughters went along, and once a month he sponsors a Friday night dinner. Now I assure, and he told me, the man who put me in touch with him, the heart specialist, the Matthew's heart specialist, who's a Shema Shabbos, the young Israel of Hollywood, he can't come to the dinner because he doesn't drive. So what do you learn from that? Miklal lav atashamei ahein, miklal hain atashamei lav. Chabad runs a dinner Friday night. Half the people are driving. You have Chabad shuls, parking lots. People have described it to me. All right. Let me just tell you one little story. The famous Rav we spoke about from South America, Rabbi Tzion Levi, Zion Levi, S-I-O-N, Levi. Talmud learned together with Rabbi Avadya Yosef. I think his grandson is in the rabbinate there today. The grandson came back to Israel now. Big Talmud Chacham, ran big shul, and people came to visit him, a friend, a chaver of Avadya Yosef, a Talmud Chacham, alright, a man who raised millions for Sfadik courses here, South African Jewry, particularly the Sfadik element is not exactly poor, to say the least. And they come to a shul, and they see a parking lot on Shabbos, cars coming and going, and these Jews are shaking from Israel. And they say, Eich yitachein davar kazeh, zot beit kneset, it's a beit kneset. And he answers, no, anyone know the answer? Ani lo roeh kan beit kneset, ani roeh kan beit cholim. Do you understand the implications? This is a hospital. The Jews are sick. They have no religion. They're Amayarids. They're boors. They're Eino Yirei Chayd. Would anyone, Moshe, in Kerem B'Yavna, would anyone go out and stop an ambulance on Shabbos? Absolutely not. Right or wrong? No. These are ambulances coming, bringing Jews. They should find out who they are. All right. A long Chabad kuntres that I have right in that, right there, in that little closet. Along Chabad Kutra, so one of the points, he quotes the Gemara with Hillel, where the Mechalo Shabbos, to save Hillel's life, right or wrong, when he's on the roof, he's frozen to death, and they say, better to be Mechalo Shabbos once, that the Jews should be Shemesh Shabbos many times. So they take the same, he uses this, it's not halacha l'maisa, it's one of many, it's an appeal. I don't want to say he paskins on this basis only, but he certainly tries to indicate better to help these Jews get some taste of Shabbos, even if it involves Chilul Shabbos, because ultimately we may be able to have a total Jew afterwards. All right, this is an issue that hangs fire. I can't paskin. I don't want to paskin, but there's no question that those that are mekil, yesh lehem alma lismoch. As much as it hurts a car driving up, a car pulling away, it hurts. Yesh lehem alma lismoch. People have tried to switch bar mitzvahs to Monday, Thursday, but it's not the same. It's a battle that you can't win, ultimately, because you can't turn Monday or Thursday into a Shabbat, into a ceremony, into a service where people don't look at their watch, where no one is running away, where there's time for a Kiddush, time for a Suda, the rabbi can speak once, he can speak twice. And halacha l'maisa, what I did in the rabbinate, I always spoke out against driving to shul on Shabbat. But I knew very well, 2-3 blocks from the shul, the synagogue, there were plenty of cars parked on Shabbat. And one of our funniest stories, we're walking in Maplewood, this goes back to the 60s, Maplewood, South Orange, Beth Ephraim, Maplewood Jewish Center, the shul that I had the schut to build from the ground, the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County. I even remember the family. This past year, we even met the lady, she's in her 90s in Florida, and her daughter drove her to meet us. She was part of this family, good people, but Nebuch, they knew so little. The feeling of being Jews was there, but the concept that one has to observe that there's halacha was totally lacking. So one time, Malka and I are walking home from shul, or walking home from a kiddush, whatever. And we're coming to this house, and there's the brother of this lady pulling out the car on Shabbos. And he sees us from the corner of his eyes. He jumps out of the car, makes believe he was in the car, and instead he's picking roses. He's bending down in the garden and picking roses. It could very well be that picking roses was a clear, he said, the oraita, more than anything when you get involved in driving a car. But an amaretz blight than amaretz, but I got to give him credit, he didn't want to hurt the rabbi and the Rebbetzin's feelings. Okay, adkan v'sheila, halacha l'maiser, announcements in shul, definitely permitted until you reach Yishtabach, there, after Yishtabach, don't interrupt. Much better to use flipping pages, assign an intelligent yeshiva boy to it, a kid 14, 15, let him flip the pages, but we have to make our peace with the generation. If you notice Zohar, when they open up all these services across Israel on Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, they print they give out the same marsa, same printed sheets. Everyone should daven, and they announce pages. Everyone keeps pace, and they're with them. Unfortunately, this is the generation, and we have to meet them. I stand on my theory that Rav Menashe Klein is still haunted by yesteryear, what he saw in his youth. He's not willing to adjust. Certainly in the 50s, his early active years in America to the realities of the new situation. And I'll prove this to you later on, but not yet. All right, now another very fascinating tshuva. And in this tshuva, I give you the key to understanding the struggle of Torah outside the ghetto. And it bothers me because today the new generation, my own grandchildren, they look at the Haredi world and their feeling is they're abikorsim gemurim. And I can't argue with them. They say to me not to serve in the army, milchemet mitzvah. And I try to explain to them, you're right, halachically you're right, what they're doing is criminal, it's going to get better, it is getting better, but it's certainly a criminal act not to serve in the army. I feel that even a kid from Toronto or Teaneck or Atlanta, who does, I don't know where there's a heter for someone living in London not to come and serve in the army. Rabbi Lichtenstein wrote a whole article about this. And that's a year after he published it in Tradition, his second son remained in America. Although I have to tell you, he came back to do Shlav Sheni. He did do basic training Shlav Sheni, but that's completely into the Haredi world. And Yitzchak, have you looked at your computer today? Yitzchak. Okay, forget it. Have you looked in your computer today? Look into Yeshiva World News, and you will have the joy of seeing Rabbi Yitzchak Lichtenstein installed as the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Torah Vidas. And there's a whole movie there, the installation and the dancing and his Divrei Torah. So, wow. But nevertheless, we need an army. We need people here, what we're up against. Okay. So you have to understand the Haredi world, I tell my grandchildren. They know what we have. They don't know what we're going to get. Follow me? When you grow up in the ghetto, you grow up in Meir Sharim, it's fabulous. You go into the big world. Look what happened to Jews who left the ghetto. And this is why they cling to the portable ghetto. You understand? When you wear a black hat and you wear black clothes and you walk around on Shabbos with a shtreimel, you have a portable ghetto. You don't need a real ghetto. You've built the ghetto around yourself. There's a lot to be said for it. Okay, I'm not advocating the Haredi point of life, but we have to understand them. This tshuva will open up the world to you with what he quotes. And it's the most famous tshuva I'll be quoting all year, what he leads to. It's the basis of so much scholarship, so much has been written. All of Rabbi Professor Jacob Katz, remember the name, Yaakov Katz, a good deal of his scholarship comes from this tshuva. But let's begin at the beginning. Tshuva does not have a date, but being it's in Chelik Bet of his tshuva, Mishnah Halachot Chelik Bet, Siman Ayin Aleph. The tshuva is written to Rab Chaim Uri Lifshitz. Okay, now anyone recognize the name Rab Chaim Uri Lifshitz out of the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s? Rab Chaim Uri Lifshitz, Torah Vidas graduate in the rabbinate in Philadelphia, a very influential rabbi, one of the few Torah voices in Philadelphia at that time. He was involved with the founding of Jewish Press, very active for Pe'ilim. He was a well-known name when I was in the rabbinate in the American years. And the Shaila here is very simple. He asks the Rav Menashe Klein, can you daven, translate in the shul English? Is it better to translate after every pasuk, or better finish a perek in Hebrew and then say it in English? Or maybe, either way, whatever the rabbi feels, perhaps do it, rotate it, do it one way one time, another way another time. And he says, why do we have to do this? The person asking the question is saying this, that we have to deal with the new generation that has no knowledge of Hebrew. And if we allow them to daven in English, al zeh yimshechu et libam lavim shebeshamayim, it will take their hearts back to God. Now, you have to know Philadelphia. Philadelphia in the 1960s, 1950s, the city was 95% conservative. It was the bastion of the conservative movement. The vice chancellor of the seminary, Greenberg, came from Philadelphia. The biggest conservative temple in the world was in Winfield, Philadelphia, the Winfield section, Har Zion Temple. Simon Greenberg, I believe he was the rabbi there, if I'm not, I'm pretty sure I'm right. Simon Greenberg was the rabbi there. From that rabbinate, they called him to become the vice chancellor of the seminary. It was Har Zion Temple. Winfield was then a beautiful neighborhood. You're thinking of Winfield today. Do you follow me? I'm talking about Winfield in the 40s, 50s, 60s. Beautiful neighborhood. Har Zion Temple was a square block. Mamish a square block. Today it's in the suburbs, whatever survives, the neighborhood is not what it used to be. Har Zion Temple, that's the famous place I told you, and it was confirmed. I heard it in the 60s, 61, I already heard the story, just happened a few years earlier. But the Talmud Rebbe, the Tversky family, his son, his grandson was being bar mitzvahed, and they davened in Har Zion in that temple. And the Rebbe came for Shabbos, his grandson's bar mitzvah. So what does a Hasidic Rebbe do in a conservative temple? They built a mechitza around the Rebbe. In other words, where the Rebbe davened, he was surrounded by a little mechitza. And that was Har Zion Temple. And the people go in there, of course, try to understand English. How do they know Hebrew? Maybe they can read Hebrew, but they don't understand one word. They went to Talmud Torah. You all know what a Talmud Torah was like, or you've heard the stories. You heard the father went to complain to the Rebbe, the Malamed in the Talmud Torah, what are you teaching my son Kaddish for? And the Rebbe answers, have no fear. By the time he learns how to say Kaddish, it'll be 120 years plus for you. And that was a Talmud Torah. I ran a Talmud Torah. I taught in Talmud Torah. I began teaching in a Talmud Torah 59, 60, 61. Yitzchak, you ran Talmud Torah where you were, right or wrong? And we all know how little, so you have to understand this is a real question. Whereas if the kid can say, listen, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Today they say, listen, we grew up here, O Israel. But the chief rabbi of England, Sachs, changed in his siddur, here to listen. Not a bad change, by the way. Listen is a little bit better than hear. Here I hear, but it doesn't mean anything. Listen means absorb it. So, halacha lemaisa, this should be the easiest question you'll ever get. Because you open the Gemara in Sota, there's a whole sugya, Sota Lamed Bet Lamed Gimel. Why does the sugya come out? Because there's Pashat Sota. You have to talk, you have to read the Pasha. No, do you do it in Hebrew? Do you do it in the language they understand? Obviously, if you do it in Hebrew and they don't understand Hebrew, you've lost the whole reason. The whole idea is to scare her. The whole idea is that she should confess. And here you're doing it in a language, if I state nicht the word, like you just didn't understand what I just said. She doesn't understand a word. Okay? So the Gemara says, Eile nemarin b'chol lashon. The following can be said in any language. Parshat Sota, Vidui Maisa, Kriyat Shema, Vitafila. Wow! And look what the Gemara is saying. Taken for granted. Kriyat Shema. You can say it in any language. Tfila. You can daven in any language. And it's black and white and open Gemara. Then the Gemara asks, daf later, what's the whole question with tefillah? Tefillah rachamehi, tefillah is rachamim, b'chol heichi deboim matzlei. And you should be able to say tefillah wherever you want, however you want. It's individualistic. Mimamakim karate Hashem. There are all types of sheilat. When a rabbi gets up at a shul dinner and he says, we're now going to say the benediction for the bread. And he reads it in English before he says it in Hebrew. It could be when he says it in Hebrew, it's a bracha lebatala, right or wrong. He already was yotzei the bracha. That's why a Talmud Chacham has to be very careful. We are now going to say a benediction for the privilege of the bread that the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Almighty, has given us. Say it in a lashon that you don't have the contents of a bracha. But when you say blessed art thou, etc., you're saying a bracha. So the Gemara takes for granted you should be able to daven everywhere. It's very, very simple. Then the Gemara is Geshaylin. It's a famous Gemara. And Moshe, I don't know if you did you study Masechet Sota? What we're about to go into, there's no way to give one simple pshat that everyone agrees to. It's an interesting Gemara. So the Gemara asks, Hama Rabbi Yehuda li'olam le'yeshala damsracha balashan aramit? But wait a minute, how can you say you can speak in any language you want? Didn't Rabbi Yehuda say you're not allowed to ask God for your needs in Aramaic? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol HaShoel Tzrachot B'Loshon Arami, Ein Malachei HaShareit Nizkakun Lo. Lefi she'ein malachei hasharet makirim b'lashon arami, and they quote Rabbi Yochanan that you can't speak to God in Aramaic because the angels will not help you if you speak in Aramaic. Now, first of all, you see here a semi-kabbalistic content, context, idea. What does this mean? That when we speak to God, we're not good enough, we're not powerful enough, we need the angels to help us. And the angels don't know Aramaic. This is the Gemara, relax, it's the Gemara's question. But I want to take the idea that we just saw. Yomo, are you a Litvak or a Chassid? Yomo, who was made into a Jew by Litvakin, is now seeking his family roots, and he goes to the Kollel Stolen Rebbe, and he eats the Rebbe's heart out, because the Rebbe says to him, "Nu," and that "Nu" is still going on 2 years after the Rebbe said it to him. But we won't elaborate. Let Yomo sit here in peace. Yomo, you go to a Hasidic Rebbe? What the heck is this all about? Min David mit the Rebbe, you give kvittles to the Rebbe pleads for you, davens for you, goes to his father-in-law's grave and puts your kvittel on it. What's going on here? But you see, this is exactly the Gemara. If you ever hear a Gemara that was anti-Litvak, Dov, this is the Gemara. You need help in getting up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. At one time, the Malachim used to help you, because who are we? Why don't we? We know how to daven, we know how to pray properly. In the middle of davening this morning, fell into my head perhaps what's happening in the playoffs and the for the pennant in the National League. You follow, the game was still on. When I got to Gris, the news was all over the world that the Dodgers won, and they're taking on the Red Sox beginning next Tuesday. Yitzchak's friends have already bought tickets to get back and get to the game. Games. New World Series. East Coast, West Coast. Wow. I got a root for the Red Sox. I told you. The Ruff. The Ruff came from Boston. Wow. Gentlemen. I did. Imagine in the middle of davening, that's what you're thinking of. But we're only human beings. I have to be honest with you. Believe me, I didn't think of that during davening. But I have other problems on my mind. I have a granddaughter-in-law in the Shmirat HaRayon, 10 weeks she has to be in the hospital. How we manage with the great-grandson, pick this, that. And, but I have other problems on my mind. It interrupted me occasionally. Oh, a malach has no problems. So the malach sees Dov and Aaron are davening, and he fills in our prayers. He lifts them up. Yomo goes to a Rebbe. He tells the Rebbe what he needs. Ich will like the money in meine tefillas. I will mention you in my prayers. He is the happiest guy in the world. They follow this Gemara. Oh boy, a Litva cannot get in this Gemara without feeling pangs of conscience. But the Gemara asked a good question. What do you mean, B'chol Hashon? You see, they're not allowed to daven. So in Aramaic, what's going on here? Nishana, Lokasha, Habi Yachid, Habi Tzibur. No, what does that mean? That when you daven alone, you're not allowed to daven in Aramaic. But if you daven with a Tzibur, you can daven with Aramaic. What is the Gemara answering? Or is it the opposite that the Gemara is answering? What's going on? Pirish Rashi. Let me quote the Rashi direct from the Gemara. Don't have to quote it from the Tshuva. Here's the Gemara. Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph Saita. Rashi. Yachid Sarech Sheyesayehu Malachei Asharet. Tzibur lo tzrichi lohu. Dichtiv. The Pasek from Iyov. Hein El Kabir lo yamas. Einam away betfilatan shel rabin. And what is the very important Rashi? Basic concept, basic pshat in the Gemara. A yachid, you're a nobody. Stand on your own 2 feet. How strong are your feet? How good is your dedication? When you daven with a tzibur, you have the strength of community, the strength of achdus, the strength of totality, the strength of B'nai Yisrael, Adat Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael. You don't need the malachim. So there you can daven in Aramaic. But when you're davening alone, be sure that you're davening in Hebrew, because the malachim are not going to help you. They don't know Aramaic, that's the simple pshak. And since they don't know, they can't help you. But when you daven in Hebrew, God will listen. But with the tzibur, you don't need the malachim. No one has to help you. Klal Yisrael, if you're not a tzaddik, there's a tzaddik davening with you. If you're not more than a beinoni, there's a lamed vavnik davening with you. The strength of the tzibur infinitely more powerful than the individual. And if that is the case, you can daven in Aramaic. And to strengthen Rashi's pshat, the Mishnah Halacha goes on, the truth of the matter is that Halacha L'maisa, the Aramaic portions of the davening are only for the tzibur. Halacha l'maisa, if you're sick and you're davening alone on Shabbos, you don't say you kumpukin. You'll see, it's brought down l'halacha. What we don't say, Litvakim, the Vilna Gaon didn't say, but part of the slichas, where you ask the malachim to take your prayers up right at the end of tachlin, right at the end of slichas, we don't say it. The Vilna Gaon was very upset. He couldn't handle this Gemara. The malachim play no role. We're individuals. We have to deal with God directly. But even that, you don't say b'yichidot. Wherever it's Aramaic, you do not say it b'yichidot. All right? A very, very powerful Gemara. And a lot of implication, both for the Hasidic lifestyle and an antithesis to a pure Litvish approach. in all justice to the, hold on one second, in all justice to the Hasidic lifestyle, I just want to add one. A Rebbe's role is not only to intercede before God. A Rebbe's role, I'll quote the Rav now, in 1968, a year and a half after the tragedy of losing his mother, his brother, had it go, his brother, his mother, brother, wife, after the tragedy of losing them all. So at the Yutet Kislev Fabrengen in Boston, the Rav was the featured speaker. And at that talk, the Rav cried in Yiddish. He said he wishes he could be a chassid, because a chassid has the advantage that he can unburden himself to a Rebbe and he walks away feeling better. There's a lot of truth to this. I've seen it in life. I've seen it as a Rebbe, hearing others. And I've seen it as a Talmud, talking to my Rebbeim. There's a lot of truth to this. So I don't want to leave you with the impression that the Hasidic, Rebbe, Talmud, Chassid relationship is only the Rebbe has to help me ascend on high, the Rebbe has to lift me, the Rebbe has to take my prayers and lift them. What are you majoring? Psychology. Have you ever sat in a psychologist's meeting with patients, with a patient, with a couple, with a number of people who need psychological guidance on what they're trying to do? Part of psychology is exactly the role of the Rebbe. You unburden yourself. You feel better. Then the psychologist, with common sense, can help you chart a more proper course for yourself. Follow me? That's a Rebbe. And I'll never forget, I asked a Hasidic Rebbe who I can talk to like this. I don't want to mention who he is because he's very famous today and very big on the Israeli scene. But I knew him as a little kid. And I said to him, how the heck did you take the responsibility of telling people what to do? Well, that's a terrific responsibility. I wasn't raised with that. The Rav never told us what to do. The Rav was criticized. The Jewish observer criticized the Rav that he didn't tell his students what to do. We'll come to this. I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to give out something that's going to cost you 36 G's to the IOU list. But the old Chazon Lemoed. And you know what the Rebbe, this young Rebbe answered me? I never tell anyone what to do. I let the Chassid speak. And I pick up on what he's saying, what he really wants to do. All I'm there for is to encourage him. And I hold that to be a fabulous answer. I said, who taught you this? He said, my father taught me this. My father was taught this by his grandfather. So you see, you can't take this Gemara. It's not the entire relationship, but it certainly is basic to the Chassid Rebbe relationship. Yes, Moshe.
There is Shita in Rishonim that you can daven in other languages. It's just Aramaic. It's a problem.
I'm going to show you. There's a whole world open here. But this is the simple pshat in the Gemara. You got to remember that there are so many different pshatim in this Gemara. Some have it that, of course, the angels know Aramaic, but they don't like Aramaic. Some feel, no, the angels, it's not that they don't like Aramaic, but they're chayshish because Aramaic is the closest language to Hebrew, that if you let them daven in Aramaic, they won't know Hebrew. And there's so many different pshatim. But
you say the same thing for Yiddish?
No, Yiddish is not as close to Hebrew as Aramaic. Yiddish is a jargon of Aramaic, Hebrew, German, but we're talking at the time of the Gemara, there was no Yiddish yet. The jargon, or the secondary language, was Aramaic. But what do we see from this Gemara? What kind of shaila is it? Of course you should be able to daven in English, in German, particularly in the shul. Where is there a big problem when you're davening with Yechidat? Where you're davening with Yechidat, you're being dependent upon your own davening, your own thinking, your own ability, your own schut. But when you daven in shul and the tzibur is there, there should be no problem whatsoever. Even Aramaic, you're allowed to say in shul, according to the pshat in this Gemara. There you don't need the angels. Okay, we'll leave off at this point. We'll pick up exactly here next week. And next week, you'll see what this leads into. I'm going to introduce you to one of the most famous tribute ever written when you deal with the history of the Torah community outside the ghetto, modern times. Excuse me? Chatam Sofer, absolutely. Famous Chatam Sofer, quoted, re-quoted, very important Chatam Sofer, very interesting Chatam Sofer, and you'll understand where we've come in the last 200 years, why we've lived the way we've lived, and this tshuva touches upon it. Here you'll see he's a little bit more open-minded as far as the modern world than in the previous tshuva. And then I go one step further with computers, which you're going to find a very small, very, very fascinating. It reveals the mindset of the Menashe Klein. And I just spoke with a sofer on Friday. I was at a wedding Friday. And at the wedding, I met someone I knew. He probably made him come to some of my classes in the 70s. He became a sofer. Akiva Garber, if you recognize the name, Dina's husband. Wonderful people. And I spoke with him about the computers. I'll give you all the information, but let me give it in due course. So I want to reiterate, what do we do today? First of all, halacha l'maisa, we finished out a few questions, a few corrections. The book, Beyond Routine, Turning Ritual into Meaningful Jewish Practice. And I can see it's a companion volume to his first book, Praying Your Age, I believe the first book is called. Let me see if it's mentioned here. I believe it's called Praying Your Age. No, it doesn't say, also by the same author, but very, very interesting acknowledgments. No, all right. I believe it's Praying Your Age, Davening Your Age. And then I remember the Mashkiach used to say, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson, he used to say that the greatest danger to a Jew is the way he davens, because he never grows up. So what do you mean by that? He said, when it comes to davening, we're taught to davening when we're 6 years old, 7 years old, and when we're 70, we're still davening the same way. We don't know what we're saying, we never bothered to study it, never bothered to analyze. There's a lot of truth to this. Because there's a very big problem in Israel that has the yeshivot, where they say the kids don't know how to daven, that they're not succeeding in transmitting to them a feeling of davening. That's why Hasidus, there's neo-Hasidus all over the place in America and in Israel. Part of the problem is that we don't teach davening, the structure, what it's about. The Rav, there's a famous story with the Rav that he loves to tell time and again. He told the story of a rabbi that came to him, and the rabbi said, I have a real problem with my balabatim. They want me to daven and end Shabbos like 20 minutes after sunset. They're always in a rush. They got to get home. They have to start the week. And the rav, and you know, we're typical balabatim bossing the rabbi around. So the rav said, why don't you give some she'urim about Bein Hashmashat, what it's about? And if they'll have knowledge, they'll understand you a lot better. And the Rav said, the rabbi introduced Shayurim from Eretz, but explaining these are intelligent people. 90% of them are college graduates. Some of them have advanced degrees. And he gave Shayurim on Bein Hashmashat and the whole Machloket and the whole concept and Rabbeinu Tam and the way we paskin and... He had no problem afterwards. He explained that Shabbos is a din d'oraita. We're dealing here with an isa d'oraita. So we have to be careful, very careful, to be sure that Shabbat is over. What are you showing me? I quoted that an hour and a half ago when you were walking from Shvatami. You're almost all excited that the book begins by quoting yours truly. Okay, so what did we do today? We finished out the first question, interrupting, and we've come on to another question, davening b'chol lashon. Again, you don't see it today. You don't see it today in the Orthodox shuls, because what's happening in America, basically speaking, the conservative reform of falling away, they don't wander into an Orthodox shul, they don't wander into any type of shul or temple. And in the Orthodox shul, particularly the young Israels, particularly in the big cities, you run today minyanim that are 80 or 90% Shomer Torah mitzvah. In Stanford, it was very interesting. The upstairs shul was like a shul out of the 40s, 50s. Downstairs, the Hashkama Minyan was like a young Israel. And there I still saw the old and the new. But all right, we'll finish, we'll go further, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week. Not next week, in 2 weeks' time. I'll explain in a second. Tomorrow is a very important shir. I pick up with Agudat Yisrael in America, the Tehran children, and I'm going to explain something where I have a theory which I'm willing to bet I'm 99% right, and that theory opens your eyes. Dealing with the Tehran children, we'll leave that for tomorrow. Next week is an extraterritorial Sheyurim. We are no longer in Israel. We're in Kehilat Sharei Tfilah in Lawrence, New York. And I owe them two Sheyurim that I was too sick to give this past summer. But the Ribbono Shel Olam has given strength. And I revised the first one entirely on the basis of conversations I had with people from Sharei Tfilah. And it's on the problems that we have with the self-created aguna, or man-made aguna. I'm dealing from Rabbi Ratman to Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. And even for Manchester, it's a conversation I had a week ago with someone, a Rav in Manchester, this year will be very important. The Monday class is something they wanted to hear about. I want to deal with the Rav in Berlin and some lasting influence on his life as a result of those seven good years, as he called it. He referred to it as the seven good years in Berlin, which is an amazing thing to think of when you think what happened right afterwards. Okay. So I announced the Shema call from Rabbis Emanuel Ratman to Abadji Yosef, the Rav in Berlin, influences that last a lifetime. Is there anyone sitting in this class that has a connection to Michlala that's right down the road? I want to send two books there. Is there any Rebbetzin, from the Kollel who goes to Michlala? If anyone, let me know. Two copies, one for Moshe, pass that over, and one for Yitzchak. This is a very fascinating topic that Rav Usher Weiss deals with. Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. Do we have to reach out to the b'nei Noach? He's not the only one, but this is Rav Usher Weiss speaking. Here's a talk that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik gave in 1975 to the Mechanchim, who took a special Torah Mesorah program. Beautiful talk on Chinuch. Why Rav Chaim cried with America. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, very interesting talk. A lot in there that the Rav would talk about. Here's someone asked me a question. If there's any responsa on a church becoming a shul. So first of all, I have to tell you, in Maplewood, New Jersey, about three blocks from where I lived, there was a church. Whenever I saw that church, I knew I had to turn left and go into my block, and a block and a half away was 40 Suffolk Avenue. Malka would say it aloud. I'd say, no, you can't say it aloud. You don't mention a church. And, well, anyway, we came back to Maplewood a number of years ago on our own. No one remembers me there. No one knows. No one's alive anymore from that period. And life moves on. That's life. Reed Kohelet As much as it hurts me to say it, I built that shul from the ground with these 10 fingers. So we come back, and we see the church has no steeple. I notice in front of the church, there's a sign up, a kindergarten, and look to me like a Jewish sign. The door was open. I opened the door. There's my shul. The shul took over the church. The shul became a dormitory because there's a little yeshiva that's Chabad. So there's a living example of a shul becoming a church. But I remembered that many years ago I saw some material on it. And I have to tell you, my memory was right on. I saw this last in 1955. So I Xeroxed for the person. Here, I sent it to him via email. Here's a copy if anyone wants. On the shul umeshiv in English, on a shul becoming a church. Here is from the New York Times on Senpo Sugihara. The man, the Japanese man who saved 6,000 Jews with his handwriting, a conservative rabbi, visited Japan and spoke at his high school, and it's Rabbi Wolpe. He's a very famous conservative rabbi from Los Angeles. Yeah, this is recently.
Wolpe was at Har Zion.
That was his father. And this is now. And a very interesting article, his talk. Here are two copies. This is the final one, our final issue. They've given up on publications. Everything is online. This is from the Steinhardt Foundation. They spend millions and millions of dollars to try to create Jews. And I tell you, when you read this, you have to laugh. Without Shabbat, without Kashrut, without Parat Mishpacha, there are no Jews. They should have written about Friday night dinners. Finally, this is for Yitzchak. This is from Makar Rishon a week ago. You see this family? Mennonites, if I'm pronouncing it right. Chabad got hold of them. They've just come in Aliyah. They are all from Jews. The entire family. New names? What an article. And I'll tell you, when you look at the mother and father, don't they look a little bit Jewish? No one's going to question. It's not a goyish face. Not a goyish face. And it's all on their own. They were starting to question. They're reading the Bible. They see that you have to observe Friday, Shabbos, I mean, and how can you observe Sunday, and then you can't have meat and milk. And it's unbelievable. And they settled, if I'm not mistaken, in Ofakim. Wow. What a family. Me'eretz ha'emish ba'amerika l'ofakim she'betzfon ha'negev ha'yisraeli. That's for you, because you handle it. I want to, Yitzchak, who's been involved with conversions for many, many years. I want to thank everyone for coming. It's a moment you have a mitzvah, I hope, of Talmud Torah and a gemilat chesed that you give the Rebbe a good audience. To those listening around the world, once again, I thank you for your kind comments. It touches my heart. It doesn't go unnoticed. And I pray to the Rebbeinu Shlomo for added strength, for good health, for good news here and elsewhere. Lo pashut, the times in which we live, the headlines, the internet, half of it is to scare you. The other half, we have to turn to the Rebbeinu Shalom and ask for strength to overcome the half that scares us. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Yomo, please turn the other one off.